from the water, asking me to be precise about Avery's last location. The self-hatred I feel for not realizing sooner that she was missing. It can't last more than a minute before they find her. By the time I see Connor and Eli emerge from the waves, I'm about to drop to my knees. Eli gets out first. Then there's Connor, holding a smaller body folded against his chest. Next to me, there are gasps. Oh my gods. Holy shits. Avery is conscious as Connor carries her out of the ocean. Her coughing is chest deep, but she's breathing, her lungs forcefully expelling water. When I see her standing on her feet, I feel a massive wave of relief. Everyone crowds around her, asking her if she's okay, if they should call someone. What do you need? But she clings to Connor, who pulls the wet hair back from her face. When he bends forward to wrap a towel around her shoulder, I watch her laugh and hug him, arms tight around his waist. My relief turns into something else. Something sour that disgusts me. Neota's voice makes me jump.
You think she faked it?
She asks, suddenly next to me.
What? Absolutely no.
Yeah, me neither, sadly. Maybe the wedding is cursed after all. We exchange a long look. Then we both laugh, a mix of nervousness, adrenaline crash, and incredulity at the absurd situation. A few feet away, everyone's talking at once. This could have gone so bad.
I know.
Neota pats my shoulder.
The thing is, it was prime romance material.
Was it?
Yep. Pretty sure I've read a book in which this exact scene occurs. The guy saves the girl, who happens to be his estranged former lover.
Yeah, I swallow. I don't want to feel like I do now. If something had happened to Avery, I'd be devastated.
What the hell is wrong with me?
Well, what comes next? In the book, I mean. I believe that the brush with death rekindles their love, and after a passionate declaration, they celebrate the impermanence of life with several bouts of improbably orgasmic sexual intercourse.
Sounds like a good book. Maybe you should bring it on our next beach vacation.
Oh, I will.
Cool.
We're going to buddy read it.
Oh, no, Maya. She wraps an arm around my waist. We're going to buddy set it on fire.
We laugh again, a bit hysterical, until...
Maya?
Something warm squeezes my hand. Kaida, pointing at the wave that rudely dragged her pail away. I gasp theatrically.
What happened to your pail?
We have to rescue it, don't we? She nods urgently, and together we set out for the task. The last thing I see before turning around is Connor, carrying Avery up the staircase toward the villa. Chapter 19. 3 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, and 6 days earlier. Edinburgh, Scotland.
Of course Connor's staying at the Balmoral.
I would tease him about it, but there are two reasons why that won't be happening. The first is that I wouldn't want to provoke him into dropping me. As it turns out, the alcohol metabolizing enzymes I've been working on must be on vacation.
I'm not drunk.
But I am tipsy. And I made the crucial mistake of tripping over a cobblestone as I animatedly explained to Connor that in the event of an apocalypse, I would lie down in the streets and let the zombies take me. Because I could survive longer, but why would I want to? He decided that I needed to be carried. I decided not to protest too much. The second and most important reason is that I'm too concerned with prying a story out of him. What do you mean your father hired her? His eye roll fills the mirror-wrapped elevator.
As I said, forget that I mentioned.
Nuh-uh.
I started this by angrily oversharing every single annoying thing Alfie did in the 18 months of our relationship, ranging from the morning he smushed my lipstick while drawing a heart on my bathroom mirror
to the way he got me tickets for a band he liked for my birthday. Hindsight's 20/20, but I must wonder, was the heart for Georgia all along?
I told you,
he says.
Nothing to add.
We're on his floor, and he's clearly planning to walk out of the elevator. So I lean over and press the shut doors button.
What are you doing, Trouble?
Tell me more about what happened after she hit on you. I send the elevator back to the first floor, via the fourth, third, and second. How did you realize that your dad had sent her? An indulgent sigh. I hear it, and feel it, through the many places where my body touches his. Yes, we are inside. Yes, I'm unlikely to stumble again. Yes, he's still carrying me.
She was the most attractive woman I'd ever seen. Spoke three languages and had a graduate degree. She was way out of my league.
Aw, Connor. I'm sure you were the handsomest, pimply 18-year-old in the world. So you asked her if she'd been hired, and she...
immediately admitted that she had been sent to, and this is the expression she used, take my virginity, as I was now of age.
And you told her?
That my virginity was long gone, and that her services were not required, but that she should get as much money as possible out of my father. She sat in my room and showed me pictures of her cats and of her recent vacation in Mallorca. We chatted for about 20 minutes, and then she left.
Were you mad at your dad?
Yes, but not because of this. Frankly, I was proud.
Of him?
Of myself. For managing to hide the sexual experiences I'd had from a guy who constantly set private investigators after his children.
He did? Couldn't he just ask? He smiles like, I live in a world in which hammer sharks and clownfish frolic together in the ocean, and no blood is ever spilled. He shifts into me and presses the button for the fifth floor. Wait, wait, wait! The rise begins. Your brothers! Did he do it just for you?
I highly doubt it.
I cringe. God, rich people are messed up.
And we've got money for therapy, which leaves us no excuses.
The suite where he's staying is larger than my apartment, and nothing like the sleek, mid-century decor I usually find in American hotels. It's a masterclass in European elegance, and probably wasted on me. But as soon as Connor sets me on the floor, I begin exploring like it's my job. Can I steal the toiletries? I ask, glancing around the spotless bathroom.
Do you need me to buy you shampoo?
Nah, I just want the thrill of the crime.
You may take them, but sorry to inform you, it's not theft.
Forget about it then. Oh my God, have you seen this shower?
I did. What's so special about it?
It's giant! It's a sex shower! I really am drunker than I thought. He's clearly trying not to laugh.
Every shower is a sex shower if you want it enough.
You know what? Good point. I brush past him on my way out of the bathroom, a little woozy. Can I lie on your bed? I ask, letting myself flop on the mattress before he agrees. There has been no conversation about me sleeping here. I didn't ask, he didn't offer, and yet, I know I'm not going back to my place. Because I don't want to be with Georgia and Elfie. Because I'm exhausted. Because of other reasons. There are little cogs in my head, grinding, and I hope Connor can't hear them. Yet.
There's another bedroom across the living room, too,
he says, but I ignore him and turn on my back, starfishing, smiling at the ceiling, sinking in the soft cloud of the comforter. Hey, can I ask you for a favor? A few beats later, Connor is looking down at me, and it's ridiculous. The more I see him, the more I...
You may, Maya.
When you're back in Austin, don't tell Eli and Manami that you were here. He considers it briefly.
I don't keep secrets from them.
Never?
Never.
I prop up on my elbow. Why?
Part of the reason we are friends is that someone kept secrets from us. And we swore to never do the same.
Right. I get it. However, counter-argument. His lips twitch, like he knows I'm about to make him smile. Like he's learned my beats over the past... Has it been only 24 hours?
Let's hear it.
I open my mouth to show him my best debate self, and that's when I'm hit with the realization that the shots of tequila may have been a mistake. As I vomit in Connor's pristine bathroom, he holds my hair back and rubs his large palm against my spine. I wake up several hours later, alone in Connor's bed. My last memory is of a comforter being laid out over me, cool fingers against my forehead, and a shushing sound as I insisted that, fine, I'm all right. Not drunk, just sick. Stomach bug. It's 2:30 in the morning, and my brain feels smooth. The fuzziness of the alcohol nothing more than a lingering ache in my temples. When I walk into the living room, Connor is on the phone, wearing sweats and a white t-shirt, deep register talking about tax filings and liability. I observe him, tired, happy, not yet willing to disturb this moment. A faint memory that must be at least half a decade old floats upward. Manami in our kitchen, sighing, Eli rubbing his eyes and asking,
Should we escalate this to Hark?
He must be the emergency guy, the one who takes care of the bottom line, and yet I can tell that the inside of his head is a mess of flying thoughts. Most work-related, but by no means all. He keeps that shit locked tight, though. Is that why Manami didn't marry him?
If it's reviewing the customer and supplier agreements.
He notices me and instantly says,
Sorry, I'll have to go. Yeah, of course.
He hangs up, his lips curve, amused. I decide, at this very moment, not to bother being embarrassed about what happened. Can I borrow your toothbrush? I ask.
By all means.
He says, with that faintly sarcastic undertone that I may be starting to fall for. Thanks! On my way to the bathroom, I make a pit stop in his closet. Ignoring the 5 identical suits hanging in it, I steal a threadbare Yale t-shirt. Then, as I let the faucet run, I stare at my flushed cheeks, suddenly determined. I discard my jeans and dig a scrunchie out of the pocket. Then change my mind on what to do with my hair. A few minutes later, Connor finds me sitting in his bed wearing my pilfered PJs. If he's surprised, it doesn't show.
Sobered up?
I nod.
You need anything?
I shake my head.
You should still drink this.
He's holding a glass of water, and I decide that he's right. I'm thirsty, and I also want him to come closer. Sorry I stole your bed, I say after a long sip.
It's fine. I'll take the other.
You don't have to. I pat the mattress next to me, slide a little, making room for him. It's too much too soon. I can tell in the way he stiffens.
Maya.
Yeah?
I need to be sure that you know this isn't going there.
I'm being rebuked. Scolded, even. I must be into that. What's going where? I ask, blinking, and I must hit the sweet spot. The way I let my eyes widen just enough, the tilt of my head at an angle that broadcasts utter ignorance. No, I don't have the faintest clue what he might be talking about. I'm convincing. His jaw shifts, but after a moment he smiles and shakes his head, like he just mixed up a shadow for a ghost and feels sheepish about it.
You got interrupted. Tell me about that counter-argument.
He sits next to me, weight dipping the mattress. His eyes are warm. Not always, not by default, but on me tonight. His gaze has been thawing throughout the day. Oh yeah, counter-argument. You shouldn't tell Eli because... Aren't you my friend, too?
Am I?
You tell me.
Well, there is the fact that until 30 hours ago, I thought you were still in middle school.
No, you didn't. We had simply forgotten about each other's existence. Silent laughter. But now you have a relationship with me, too, and I'm not going to ask you to keep secrets from my brother if they can harm him. But I'd rather he found out about this weird mess that I've made of my life from me. I need a little more time before Eli and I... He gets it, because he nods. And when I shift into him for a hug, he lets me. He reciprocates. His arms close as much on my waist as mine loop around his neck. I memorize the feel of his flesh, the blood pulsing underneath. The consistency, so different from mine, but made of the same stuff. It's more physical contact than we've had all day. He smells like fresh air and something soapy. Warm skin that I want to lick. Which might be the reason I do something... Yeah, pretty stupid. I was going to slowly work toward this. I was going to... Is seduce a word anyone has used in the past 10 years? I was going to, but I can't help myself. I can't remember ever being more turned on, ever wanting so assuredly. So I pull back a little, change the angle, and try to press my lips against Connor's, who doesn't push me away. He does, however, grip my chin in between his fingers, stopping my mouth just a few short inches from his. He's right here, breathing even, pupils wide, and yet...
No,
he says, firm. A heartbeat later, cold air brushes against my bare legs, and he's walking out of the room. Well, shit. Wait, Connor! I run after him, but stop the second he spins around to face me. He looks so... furious. It should probably scare me into a rapid retreat. All it does, though, is make me furious, too. Yep. Anger issues.
Maya, this is...
He shakes his head.
We can't.
Why?
Because.
You like me, I say, accusing. You want me.
Do I? What else do I want, Maya?
World peace? Honestly, I don't care, but I do know that you're attracted to me.
Is the attraction in the room with us?
He asks, derisive. Yes, I say, deliberately lowering my eyes to his hips. He turns away, raking his fingers through his hair.
Jesus.
You want me, Connor, I repeat. It's a statement, an axiom. We can fight over what to do about it. We can disagree on every letter of every word we say to each other, but I refuse to negotiate this simple truth. He lets out a single, bitter laugh, takes several angry steps closer, pointing his finger at me.
Of course I fucking want you. You are stupidly beautiful and too fucking smart for your own good. And I refuse to go there, Maya.
Why?
Because you're 20 and I'm not. That's the end of it.
I flinch backward. For some reason, I did not expect this. I figured he'd bring up Eli, but my age... Why would he care? You can't be serious.
Watch me. Christ.
He retreats again, running a hand down his face. What does my age have to do with it? You realize that it's just a construct... He drops his arms.
If I cut a tree, I can count its rings. Age is a fucking biological reality.
What does deforestation have to do with us? Please, explain it to me, because I...
Come on, Maya.
We just spent a really nice day together in which we were just people hanging out, so...
Maya,
he says darkly.
You are being disingenuous.
I'm not. Please. Spell it out for me. Connor seems to wrestle with himself for a moment. A deep nod.
Very well. There is lots going on, starting with the obvious, which is that I'm 15 years older than you.
I shrug. Like you said, Alfie was older too. He's nearly 22.
There is no comparison.
What if he were 23? Or 24? Or 25? 26?
Moya.
No, really. Give me a cutoff. If you're so certain that being with someone who's older than you is wrong, there must be a scientific threshold to establish it. Where is the formula, Connor?
You're being obtuse. This wide an age gap always comes with a power imbalance.
I snort. You, I point at him, could be a million years old, and you still wouldn't be in a position of authority over me. Age is not always a proxy for power. It can be, sure, but I have absolutely nothing to gain from being with you. Aside from being with you. And in case I haven't made it clear, I'm talking about sex. He closes his eyes like he needs to get himself together. For a split second, I think I won. Turns out, I'm a fool.
I am in a position of power, Moya. I have a great deal more money than you do.
My brother is filthy rich, and I have full access to his money. I fold my arms, take a step into him. Come on, give me more.
There are several complicating factors. You knew me when you were young, and vice versa.
True. And since we knew each other so well, I dyed my hair the year I turned 14. What color? His lost expression would be funny if I weren't busy arguing for my life. Where did I go to school? What was my favorite book? What was my best friend's name? Come on, Connor. Tell me something about me as a teenager, or I'll have to think that you barely ever glanced at me, which, incidentally, is exactly what happened. I step closer. This is not a crush that I never outgrew and you're exploiting. There is no hero worship. This is, plain and simple, me meeting someone that I like and wanting to...
Because you're heartbroken and rebounding from the end of your first long-term relationship. I came to your aid when you needed someone, and now you feel grateful and...
And what? What if I want to have sex with you because I feel grateful? What if I want to have sex with you because you have pretty eyes, because I like your mattress, because you're rich?
Moya.
I exhale, outraged. If you are not interested in being with me for any reason at all, then I'm going to drop this. No questions asked. No is a full sentence. But you're not saying that. You are automatically assuming that being younger and poorer and recently dumped makes me unable to initiate consensual sex, and this is infantilizing! If I can move abroad on my own, if I can vote, then I can also decide who I want to fuck. There is a quiver to my lips. I don't like the way it undermines my point, so I gather myself and add, more calmly, I understand that you're worried about taking advantage, and I appreciate it. But I'd like for you to stop patronizing me and treat me like an adult. I'm pretty proud of how that last part came out. Determined, fully fledged, uncompromising. Even more so when it becomes obvious that Connor has no half-decent response to that. Isn't it what your father thinks, Connor? I ask quietly. It's the kill shot. That every relationship has to be conceptualized in terms of power. That someone always has to dominate and take advantage. He is desperate, clenching his jaw, all his muscles tense. So out of options, he backtracks all the way to our axiom.
Maybe I just don't want you,
he says through gritted teeth. I smile. Poor guy. Yeah? Maybe, though you already admitted you do.
Maybe I fucking lied.
I bite back an even wider grin. I get it. You didn't want to hurt my feelings. I bet you don't really find me beautiful or smart. His eye twitches like he's dying to contradict me on that. It's sweet. It makes me want him even more. I step closer, drawn by his heat, crossing that last line. crane up my neck. The hem of my shirt brushes against his sweats. The truth is that I find him ridiculously attractive in ways that have nothing to do with how handsome he is. Yes, I would love to have sex with him. That specific desire sparked inside me at some point during the day and has steadily grown harder to ignore, heavier at the bottom of my stomach. Right now, though, what I want is for him to hold me and to hold him back. Circling my arms against his waist feels so, so lovely. Here, I say, letting my forehead fall just below his collarbone. Isn't this nice? He grunts, but it's a yes. His erection presses against my stomach, hard, immense. If you want me, I say simply, you should have me. He must agree, because I'm being spun around. The wall is suddenly behind me, pushed into my back, and a split second later, Connor's muscular thigh is slotting between mine, an unexpected pressure right there, between my legs. I gasp.
Is this what you want?
He murmurs, and yes, it is. Not all of it, but enough that I'm already losing track of my surroundings. I try to arch up, to chase his mouth, but he's too much taller and not helping at all. Doesn't matter, though. His hands are exactly where they should be, on my hip and lower back, tilting me in the perfect position for the meat of his thigh to hit. Oh my God, I moan. He makes a clicking, soothing noise, but doesn't stop. I reach up, nails scraping against his scalp, the short hair at his nape as my hips move in search of more friction. My underwear is soaked. I wonder if he can feel the slick mess of it through the fabric of his sweats.
It's okay.
He reassures me, and apparently I needed that. There is nothing particularly romantic about this. Nothing sophisticated or delicate about the way he grinds me over his body, but it feels like the most intimate experience I've ever had in my life. So intimate, I cannot do this alone. I bend my neck back, desperate to meet his gaze. He's above my shoulder, forehead against the wall, breathing ragged and quick. Our eyes lock, and I blush all over. Connor, I start. And I want to say more. The underside of his cock pushes roughly against my hip bone, and I want to touch it. But before I can, pleasure bursts inside me, and I come, stupefied by the aftershocks of my own body, the ungainly, quaking tremors that seize me. Having an orgasm in front of someone is always a vulnerable, bearing experience. Connor watches me lose control, irises swallowed by his pupils, and it just makes the experience even more erotic.
Fuck!
He hisses from above, lips pressed hotly against my temple. For a moment, his grip is a vice-tight, splitting, bruising cage.
Fuck!
I breathe through the heat, ground myself as I climb back down. Okay, so maybe I thought I knew what good orgasms felt like, and I'm now discovering that I was wrong. It's fine. I can work on it. We can work on it. A minute later, Connor lowers me on his bed. I'm worried that he might leave me here alone, but he lies next to me, gathers me in his arms. His eyes are full of something that's too much like alarm. I hope that the flush on my cheekbones and the smile on my face will tip him off that I'm pretty great, actually. Hi, I say, squirming up to his body. I can feel his heartbeat under my hand, thumping through my skin. He wants me. It's not just evident from the ridge in his pants. It comes off him in waves. His hand cups my face, thumb caressing my lower lip back and forth.
You're a fucking menace,
he mutters, making me smile. Yep, I am. I want more. I want so much more. My fingers travel down the warm muscles of his chest, meet the waist of his sweats. It's a simple matter of sliding my palm inside and...
No!
He traps my wrist. Doesn't shoo my hand away, but neither does he let me proceed. Why? I frown. Why can't I touch you?
Because I say so.
He must see how little his reasoning convinces me, because he adds,
Because I'm an old man, and if I blow my load now, I'll be out of commission for the next 5 business days.
I laugh. So?
So, give me a minute. Just rest, okay?
Okay. I burrow into his chest, hiking a leg over his. But afterward?
Afterward,
he says, tone inscrutable, and I don't look up to scan his eyes for clues on how to interpret it, and, well, that's my mistake. It takes me less than a minute to fall asleep. When I wake up, the sun is high in the sky, and Connor Harkness is gone. Chapter 20. Present day, Taormina, Italy. Eli's purpose in life appears to be keeping Rue happy, rested, and well-fed, so I'm not surprised when his activity of choice for the night is a pasta-making lesson. The class is held at a traditional restaurant downtown because no amount of coin or banknotes will convince Lucrezia to let anyone inside her kitchen, and I respect that, Tamarin said. It's been a long day, not just because of the near drowning. The heat beat us down. The salt and the sand and the sweat drained us. The offer to join the class is extended to everyone, but Minami and Sul decide to stay in with a beach-drunk Kaida. Tamarin says something about work calls. Paul has a project meeting that he really cannot miss, and Axel... Who knows where Axel is? He probably got lost on his way from the room to the bathroom, Tisha tells me. I thought all rooms had en-suites? Exactly my point. The class is open to more than just our party. It requires working in pairs, assuming couplehood as the default state, as though the world and its activities are built for two. Discomfort in all social situations is the toll loveless singles must pay for not conforming to its demands. People in happy relationships love to rub our noses in it, Niota grumbles. She and I, naturally, pair up. Also just as naturally, Diego and Tisha, and Rue and Eli. Avery and Connor, too. So natural, the two of them don't even seem to need a conversation on the topic. Connor takes a seat, and Avery plops down next to him. She has a clean bill of health from Dr. Cacciari, who, given the frequency of our calls, may be considering setting up a tent in the citrus grove. I hope Eli's tipping him well. Making pasta, as it turns out, is not difficult. And yet, Niota and I are terrible at it. So much so, the instructor makes an example of us in front of the class. Not once, not twice, and not even thrice.
Can you believe this, asshole?
Niota whispers furiously.
Where is this Maiageddon I hear so much about? Shouldn't she be turning green, flipping the table?
Sadly, she only comes up during explicitly framed competitions. I take a sip of my second Negroni, working toward a nice buzz. There has to be a trigger. Tallied points, a race, that kind of stuff.
Okay, sir,
Niota tells the instructor the fourth time he approaches, likely to show the other students how not to create a nest of tagliatelle.
I realize that you may perceive us as easy targets, but this girl right here, she splits electrons and blasts them into the atmosphere.
I may have no idea what Niota does at work, but that's obviously mutual.
I am able to list the world's 50 top assets by market cap, including
ETFs, crypto, and precious metals. So stop treating us like we're the village fools and show some respect!
I don't understand.
The instructor's English is serviceable, but his vocabulary appears to be mostly carbohydrate adjacent.
What you say?
She leans toward him. Step away from my tagliatelle. He recoils. Neota's glare, clearly, is a universal language. The worst part comes later. Sitting outside on the restaurant's patio, as a piano man croons an Italian ballad, we get to eat the fruits of our labor.
I didn't think pasta could taste bad,
I tell Neota, washing it all down with my third Negroni. She grimaces into her wine.
And yet...
But after I come back from the restroom, I notice that the flavor and the consistency have vastly improved. It even looks better.
Hark switched his plate with yours when he thought I wasn't paying attention,
Neota whispers at me, her told-you-so stare even more pronounced than usual. Totally the act of someone who doesn't want you. Please, tell me again how I imagined the way he stares at you. It's half instinct, half alcohol that has me rising to my feet, looking for him. He's not at the bar, though, nor anywhere else inside. I wander around the large, softly lit courtyard in the back, enjoying the soothing feeling of being outside at dusk as the first few stars begin to blink into view, wondering if Neota switched my and Connor's plate herself because she wants to give me a chance with him that badly. That's when I hear the tinny sound of something metallic hitting the floor. A silver hoop earring gleams on the cobblestone. I crouch down to pick it up.
I believe that's mine,
says a man with light brown hair. When I glance at his earlobes, I find no piercing holes. Is it? I ask.
Well, my girlfriend's.
He points at a girl in a pink sundress who's on the phone right outside the courtyard gate. She was at the pasta lesson, asked a question, and... Was she American? I think so. Midwestern, maybe. Here you go. I drop the loop in the man's palm.
Thank you. For this, and for the many educational opportunities you and your partner provided during the class.
Hey, there is a learning curve to pasta making. He smiles.
A steep one, clearly.
I squint at him. He's around my age, built like some kind of athlete. He has an accent, definitely not Italian. German, maybe? How did yours turn out?
Excellent. But only thanks to you modeling what not to do.
I refuse to show my amusement. I'll leave you to your meal, then. Do choke on your excellent tagliatelle. He chuckles. I'm about to go back toward my table, but freeze like a statue when I notice a pair of dark eyes staring at me. Connor is at the bar, sitting back against a stool, feet spread apart on the floor and arms folded on his chest. The quintessential, how long are you going to keep this bullshit up, pose. His eyebrows are sunk together, the picture of unhappy irritation. As though he thinks that I'm doing something wrong. As though he has a right to. And that's the thing about my temper. It goes from 0 to 1,000,000 really quickly. Annoyance bubbles up with so much force, I instantly whirl back to the German. This is going to sound really weird. However, his expression is patient. I continue. Could you please flirt with me? The words my and girlfriend are out of his mouth in less than a millisecond, and I must admit, they endear him to me. Oh, I'm not hitting on you, I hurry to say. But, and do not let him catch you staring, there is a man at the bar, tall, dark hair, bit of gray, couple days stubble, cute.
The guy angrily eyeing me?
Yes.
He's not really my type.
More for me, then.
Is he your boyfriend?
Nope.
Brother?
No. He purses his lips.
He's not your father, is he?
Yikes, what's up with everyone thinking that we are related?
Simple process of elimination.
Okay, well, can you act like you're flirting with me? Only as long as he's looking? The corner of his mouth lifts up.
If I do, will he come and cause a scene? I've seen the way Italians run public transportations. I doubt I'll survive their penitentiary system.
No, he won't.
You seem certain.
He'd first have to admit to himself that he cares who I talk to, and I can't see him doing that. I'm not even sure he does care. The guy's eyes briefly flicker up.
He does?
It's complicated. I lean my arm against the rough stucco wall to our right. He does the same, giving me a curious look. He's my brother's closest friend, and he's older.
How much?
15.
That's not too bad.
Says the dude who thought he was my dad. Said dude shakes his head, laughing.
Is that your type? Older guys?
Just the one.
You don't sound happy about it.
He's been a bit of a chronic issue for me. I sigh. I fear he might be terminal.
Is that why you're playing games with him? Making him jealous?
It's not. I cut off. I don't know this guy. I could not care less about his opinion. And it's refreshing to admit to my most immature impulses without fear of judgment. I wish I could make him jealous.
But?
The simplest explanation is that he's protective and thinks that chatting with some guy I've only just met is putting myself in danger. I close my eyes, feeling suddenly exhausted, weighed down by the sheer stupidity of the stunt I'm pulling. I should try harder to fall for someone else. I'm the one who's pining from afar, not him. The German nods slowly, as if considering the situation from all angles. I bet he's a great student. His transcripts must be a wet dream.
As someone with long-term expertise in pining from afar, I'm happy to play the pawn in your game.
She made you work for it, huh? I glance at the girl, who's still on the phone. I get the impression that if she asked him to tattoo whipped on his forehead, his only question would be, what font? She'd get him to agree to papyrus, too.
It was worth it,
he simply says. She won't be mad that you're helping me? I tap my chin, thoughtful. Maybe I can make Connor believe that we're having a threesome. His small smile is hard to interpret.
Oh, she'll love this. Give me your phone.
What?
Get your phone out and give it to me.
Why? Oh, yeah, that's genius. I slowly slide the cell out of my pocket and hold it out to him. Watch him type with a small smile. Put in a fake number. I'm never going to use it.
Actually, I'm giving you my girlfriend's.
Why?
Because when she's done talking with her mom, I'm going to tell her about you. And I already know that she'll want updates on how things turn out.
I accept my phone back. I doubt anything will come of it.
We'll see.
He's just rooting for me, but his smile does look flirty, and I'm grateful for it. Thanks again. I wave goodbye at him and push away from the wall. When I navigate to my contacts, I find a new name. Scarlet. Chapter 21. I pass the bar on my way back to the table. Connor is downing a glass of something clear that looks like water, but could probably disinfect an entire sewage system. With his head tipped back, I expect him not to notice me walking by. When his arm snatches out to block my path, I gasp, "What?" His forearm presses horizontally against my abdomen. One hand locks around the curve of my waist. The grip not painful, but too tight for me to wiggle free. I try to walk, but I'm stuck in place.
What are you doing, Maya?
We face opposite ways, with him leaning on the stool, his lips are level with my ear. I am attempting to go back to the table.
You know what I'm referring to.
I pause,
My heartbeat speeds up, grows louder. Do I?
I just saw you exchange numbers with some horny 20-year-old who thinks Axe body spray is the epitome of class and uses dirty socks instead of condoms.
I have to nip the inside of my cheek to avoid laughing at his assessment. Poor German. And?
And?
I slow blink, hoping to look confused. Negronis, it appears, do wonders for my acting chops. I don't know what you are...
Not this fucking week, Maya.
Why? Are you under the impression that Eli would care? I shift in his arms, just enough to meet his eyes. His grip adjusts, but doesn't relax. I guess we could ask my brother. See if he would mind me hooking up with a nice boy I just met. But I know he wouldn't.
Maya.
What about you, Connor? Would you care? His nostrils flare. I wait for him to glance away and let my lips curl into a small smile when he doesn't. Honestly, I say quietly, I thought you'd be happy.
About you behaving unsafely.
About me directing my focus to someone who's age appropriate. His eyelids flutter closed. When he opens them again, his voice is little more than a rough whisper.
I want you to delete that number.
I let my mouth fall open. You do? I'll get right to it then.
I'm serious.
Are you? Because when an adult man who has adamantly refused to have a single conversation with me for the past 10 months thinks he can tell me what to do with my time, with my body, or with my phone, his hold on me hardens and my heart skips. A gust of euphoria blows through me, and this time I don't bother holding back my laughter. Connor, you have to be joking.
Meeting up with someone you know nothing about is dangerous. Unless you got a picture of his ID, you cannot be sure.
Okay, yeah, very realistic. Background checks are totally something I run every time I want to hook up with someone. His eyes burn a hole into me, as if trying to physically extract information on what I plan to do with the guy's number. The thing is, I say, hoping to sound more conciliatory than I feel, I'm here, and you're here. But it's not the same thing at all, is it? You're all cozy, hanging out with your ex. You get to have fun, but I...
This is bullshit. Minami is married, and she and I haven't been anything other than friends for...
Not that ex, Connor. He is briefly perplexed. I watch him buffer for too long before he remembers that he used to date Avery, too.
Fuck,
he mutters. You really forgot? He looks reasonably embarrassed about that.
Listen, Maya.
Wow. It's true. I cock my head, study him. The jealousy that's been bleeding through me for the past few days dissipates at once. Sure, Avery had him, but she didn't. Not at all. You really aren't interested in her.
As I told you,
he replies, harsh.
She's a friend and a colleague.
She still likes you. She told me so yesterday at the theater.
She told me too, and I made it clear to her that nothing would be happening, ever, and that I don't think about her that...
What about me? Am I always this reckless? It's the alcohol. Has to be. Do you think about me? Did I make it into your long-term memory? The only reply I get are his fingertips tightening against my skin. When I lean into him, my chin brushes the fabric on his shoulder. It's softer than it looks. It smells like laundry soap and salt and him. It smells like his pillow all those years ago in Edinburgh. Here is the deal, Connor, I tell him. My lips nearly make contact with the short hair behind his ear. You and I are friends. And because of that, I am willing to give you a say in some of the choices I make when it comes to my, let's call it, safety. He doesn't move. doesn't even breathe. I decide to take a gamble. The guy I met, I don't have to call him back.
You categorically should not. He might.
Yeah, I know. I'm a wee lass and the world is a dangerous place. I also don't have to be nice to Paul when he flirts with me.
Christ, Maya. Paul is not worthy of cleaning the fucking soles of your shoes with his tongue.
Right. I pull back and pat his shoulder, comforting. The thing is, I can do whatever I like. And you can ask me not to. But if you want me to listen, you're going to have to give me a valid reason.
I told you, it's not...
Safe? That's not going to cut it, because I could make it safe. I'm a responsible girl, and I've had my fair share of hookups, so you don't need to worry about that. If that's what your peace of mind requires, you can stand outside my room to make sure that whoever I choose to sleep with doesn't do anything untoward. His free hand closes around the edge of the counter, knuckles moon white against the dark finishing of the wood. If that doesn't sound good, then you're going to have to do better, Connor. I want to have fun. You can ask me not to meet up with other guys, but what alternative will you offer? He doesn't prevaricate, which is a relief. My respect for him would definitely take a hit if he pretended not to understand what I'm implying.
No,
he says, so quick, so firm, so definitive. I wonder if the answer is not definitive at all. That's okay, I say. You don't have to be interested just because I am.
Maya.
But I hope you'll see where I'm coming from, too. And I hope you won't waste more of my time.
You can't do this.
No? Why not? He has no answer for me. What he does have is a muscle twitching in his jaw and an Adam's apple that bobs as he swallows. It must be a sign of my terrible temperament that I cannot help smiling at the sight. Don't worry about me. I slide my fingers around his hand, dragging it away from my waist. His palm is warm, rough-skinned, and pliant in my grip. Instead of dropping it, I guide it into his lap and gently set it on his inner thigh. The muscles in his quads twitch. I smile, and before leaving, I say, "Think about it, Connor." The offer stands. 4 days before the wedding. Chapter 22. I wake up early, again. Swim laps, again. Have a granita breakfast, again. All according to my new routine. The only different thing is the low-level hangover that I managed to shoo away only with ibuprofen. Over half of the party decides to go on a day-long excursion to Catania, but I've already made plans to go after the wedding, so I opt for staying at the villa. And we're supposed to... What? Neota asks me when I inform her. Relinquish our dysfunctional codependency? Be a part? I pat her back. Don't forget to write. I'm heading toward the beach, walking by a first-floor room. When I hear Connor's voice, I halt, hoping to avoid meeting him. Even sober, I don't regret what I told him last night. It did, however, end in something that felt a lot like another rejection, and I don't want to deal with the fallback of it. I decide to exit the villa via the back door, but stop when I hear Tamarin's distressed tone. Don't understand, she's saying. She sounds angry and tearful. Their lawyers must be aware that their demands aren't supported.
That is true.
An unknown, mechanical voice says. Phone or a Zoom call.
But even if we demonstrate that the testator left his assets in the proper amount...
Settling would be absolutely mental.
Tamarin, they are still threatening to go to the press.
They won't. They'd be making up lies.
My brothers don't care about that,
Connor points out.
They're cunts, and that's what cunts do.
I take a few silent steps backward and slip outside. feeling guilty about eavesdropping, and even guiltier about wanting to know more. Connor once called his family a nest full of devious little garden gnomes, and I wonder if...
That frown better not mean that the Maya Geddon's out.
Eli is stretched under the shade of a ficus tree, leaning against the trunk, a book open in his lap. Tiny splutes next to him, belly flush against the cool grass, four limbs shooting out at different angles. He lifts his chin when he hears my voice, but is too lazy to come greet me in person. The Maya Geddon has been temporarily subdued, but she's always a single game of charades away from nuclear annihilation of her surroundings.
As usual, then.
I grin. He points at a spot next to him.
Come hang out with me while you're still out of prison, then.
You didn't tell me Connor's dad had died, I say once we're side by side, shoulders pressed together. His eyebrow inches up.
You didn't ask?
He scans my face, shrewd. Those blue eyes and thick lashes that are a carbon copy of mine.
Where does this come from? I thought you were over wanting to use his beautiful rower's body.
I didn't know you were that horny for your best friend's shoulders, Eli.
I was quoting you, directly. I assumed you'd forgotten about him. You haven't narrated to me all the filthy things you'd want to do to him in explicit detail in a while now.
Should I resume?
God, no.
I snicker. I heard him and Tamron talk on the phone just now. It sounded tense.
Yeah.
He sighs.
It's been bad. His siblings aren't happy about how the splitting of the estate shook out. They're asking for a part of the business that was Tamron's brainchild. Threatening to sue Hark, too. Who's not even in the will. With some bullshit excuse. A mess.
Jesus. I tip back my head. The light filters through the leaves, dapples all over Tiny's face. There should be laws about that.
About what?
Dragging your siblings to court. If you've ever shared a rubber ducky during bath time or fought about who gets the top bunk, you don't get a judge to solve your problems. Either you tickle fight it out, or you just let your anger simmer as you plot revenge. He laughs.
I seriously doubt that the little lords Harkleroys ever shared a wing of their ancestral mansion, let alone a bath. They're assholes, Maya. I'll be the first to admit that Hark is fucked up in his own tragic way. But he's